You're listening to World Cafe. Hey, I'm Kaleo. The members of Death Cab for Cutie employed an unusual but effective songwriting experiment working on their latest album, Asphalt Meadows. With the pandemic keeping everyone separated, Ben Gibbard proposed a solution. Each member had 24 hours to spend with the song before having to pass it off to the next person, who was free to do whatever they wanted, no strings attached. Gibbard, along with Dave Depper, joined me to talk about why the result was a resounding success, but probably not if they were still in their 20s. Plus, how producer John Congleton was the perfect person for the job, and why anniversary shows aren't the cash grab you might think they are. Our session begins with the performance of Crooked Teeth. Here's Death Cab for Cutie on World Cafe.
It was 100 degrees as we sat beneath a willow tree. These tears didn't care, they just hung in the air and refused to fall, to fall. And I knew I'd made a horrible call, and now the state line felt like the Berlin Wall. And there was no doubt about which side I was on. I built you a home in my heart with rotten wood, and it decayed from the start. 'Cause you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. No, you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. I brave treacherous streets and kids strung out on homemade speed, and we shared a bed in which I could not sleep at all. Woo-hoo, woo-hoo. 'Cause at night the sun in retreat made the skyline look like crooked teeth in the mouth of a man who was devouring a spoke. You're so cute when you slur in your speech, but they're closing the bar and they want us to leave. And you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. No, you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. I'm a war of head versus heart, and it's always this way. My head is weak and my heart always speaks before I know what it will say. If there was nothing there all along, no, you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. No, you can't find nothing at all if there was nothing there all along. There were churches, theme parks and malls, but there was nothing there all along.
Recorded live, it's Death Cab for Cutie with a performance of Crooked Teeth from 2005's Plans. They have an excellent new album out now called Asphalt Meadows. Benjamin Gibbard and Dave Depper are here to talk about it from the group. I'm Kaleo on the World Cafe. Ben, Dave, nice to meet. Welcome back to the show.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for having us.
The new album is called Asphalt Meadows. It's the 10th studio album, and I'm particularly drawn to the juxtaposition of the title, which is also a song on the album. Ben, of all the lyrics that you could have picked out, why did that sort of gravitate to you and kind of want to put that on the cover?
I just really like the juxtaposition of those two words. And when I took the photo that ended up being on the cover of the record, and I've always liked this kind of idea that, I should say the title is kind of tied to this idea that, you know, we tend to kind of, when we're above a city, be it from a vista or on an airplane or whatever, cities look very tranquil. They can be very beautiful, especially at night with all the lights and everything like that. And just kind of the low hum of humanity kind of existing. Very much similar to, you know, if you're on a mountain or above a large kind of open green space, it just looks very calm and peaceful. But then as you get down further, literally into the soil and into the kind of the streets of either one, you start to kind of get a sense of not only the decay, but just kind of the dirt and the grit and the grime. And so I've always liked that this juxtaposition of things looking very beautiful from a distance. And then as you get closer to them, you're able to see all the imperfections.
Mm-hmm. Where was the picture actually taken from? Because it is kind of a stunning view.
It's on Bernal Hill in San Francisco. Our manager lives on Bernal. And I like to, when I'm in San Francisco, I'll stay with him and I'll go for runs on Bernal Hill. There's a nice kind of series of single track trails up there that I like to run on. And I was just kind of running one day and saw these nuns kind of gazing off in the distance, and I kind of ran past them and was like, nah, I should go back and take a photo of that, and just had my iPhone with me and just took a photo of that. And I think at the time I sent it to the rest of the guys and said, like, you know, hey, I've got the cover of our next record. And everybody's like, oh yeah, haha, cool. And I was like, no, but really this is going to be the cover.
You can make that decision though. And boom, there you go. It's good to go. We're hanging out with Ben and Dave from Death Cab for Cutie. The new album is Asphalt Meadows. Thinking about ideas for Asphalt Meadows, you sort—I don't want to say concocted—but you came up with an idea to sort of incorporate other people or other members of the band in the songwriting process in just a slightly unusual way. Can you sort of unpack a little bit about what you did and why you did it?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, at some point in the spring of 2020, I think I've been writing songs on my own, as I always do here in this little room, for what would be the next record. And I was starting to hit a little bit of a creative wall. And we also just had so much, obviously we all had so much time on our hands. And so I kind of proposed this idea to the band where we would take 5 days of a traditional work week. There are five of us in the band, and we would create an order that was usually out of the order we would normally make music, in the sense that, you know, it's not starting from something that I write a song and then pass it to somebody else. It would start with Dave would write something on guitar or keyboard, and then he would upload it to a Dropbox on Monday. And then Tuesday, let's say Jason, our drummer, would pull it down and he would add drums to it, you know, put it back up. Wednesday, Zach pulls it down, keyboards. Thursday, I pull it down, put lyrics and melody, and Nick plays bass on Friday and then mixes the song. But the rules that were in play were that you only had 24 hours to turn around your parts, no excuses, and that you had complete editorial control while you had the piece of music. So something that started out Monday with just some very kind of rudimentary guitar figures would be something very different on Friday. I thought at worst, it would be an interesting way to kind of break me out of my melodic and lyrical and harmonic kind of the corners I'd kind of painted myself into. But it turned out being so much better than even I think any of us could have imagined. And around like half or so of the record, maybe a little more, it kind of ended up being songs that were, you know, started in that, with that methodology, you know, were kind of created with that methodology.
Yeah. Dave, you've been with Death Cab for several years now, played on an album and an EP before this. What was your initial reaction when Ben proposed this idea?
I was just glad for something to do during the spring of 2020. it was a fun challenge. I didn't really know what the results would be like. I did appreciate what it brought out of me and all of us, like having 24 kind of solitary hours with some material to really sit with it outside of the pressures of being in a recording studio together without feeling on the spot to come up with a part, that kind of thing. It was very comfortable for everybody. And it also sort of made everyone raise their production game, because depending on the day of the week you had the song, like if you had it on Friday, which I did a lot of the time, it's like you already have these four contributions by four other amazing musicians. And it's like, well, how do I mix these? Do I get rid of something that's not working? How do I fit into this thing that is already perhaps done? It was just a really fun way to explore my own role within the band and my own relationship with my own sort of skill set. We all tried on a lot of different hats during this process that I think in a normal recording scenario, we don't really encounter.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's a decision that that comes born out of a lot of trust. Maybe something that you wouldn't want to try and accomplish if you were five guys in your 20s, you know, with maybe healthier egos, the need to sort of not only create, but, you know, make sure your voice is the loudest. Ben, is that fair to say that it's like when you work with guys like that, you know, everyone's going to kind of like be rowing in the same direction?
Yeah, I certainly don't think, given the personalities and level of security that we felt in our early mid 20s, I don't think we were established enough in our roles in the band, or the short way of saying this is I don't think it would have worked when we were 25. It wouldn't worked for a lot of reasons. One, because somebody would have asked, what's a Dropbox?
There is that, yes.
There is that. There have always been times in the band where everybody, regardless of the lineup of the band, that everybody's been rowing in the same direction, to continue this analogy. But I think oftentimes, you know, I'll just speak for myself, you know, I had a level of insecurity about how much control I felt I needed to have over the band in order to establish my role. And, you know, I think, you know, when these roles are undefined or they're being defined, certainly when you're younger, most people are reticent to relinquish control to someone else for fear of that control never being back in their possession again, right?
Yeah.
But at this point in the band, this is our 10th record. You know, if I were solely interested in my own legacy, if I was doing this for completely selfish purposes, this would still be a good thing to do, because we all want the record to be the best it possibly can be. And at a certain point, you realize that while we all like to get credit for the things that we contribute to a song or to a record or whatever, at the end of the day, it has the band's name on it, and we all represent the band. And we want the best thing to be, the best things, the best songs to be on the record. It's not important, you know, who wrote what it's more important that the record is great. I mean, but even having said that, you know, I want to be very clear that like we were also sticking to our main roles in the band in this process. You know, Jason wasn't writing lyrics and Dave wasn't, Dave wasn't playing drums. This wasn't like some kind of monster where like everybody's in the studio, like writing the lyrics together or like the drum parts. It was, you know, still very much like, Everybody knows what their role is in the band. Everybody's very good at their role. And, you know, while we certainly allow for suggestion and constructive criticism around how each of us do our roles, we still have pretty defined lines around like what it is we bring to the band. That tends to be the best thing that we do, and a recognition of like, well, let the drummer drum, let the keyboard player play keyboards, let the guitar player play guitar, let the lyricist write the lyrics. You know, that's how we got here in the first place. So, you know, it was not so much a free for all as it was everybody, just as Dave said, you know, really being given the time in their own studio to contribute in the best way that they knew possible, given their skill set.
You're listening to The World Cafe. Ben Gibbard, Dave Depper of Death Cab for Cutie here talking about Asphalt Meadows, their latest album. Up next, a performance of Here to Forever. And I was very just struck by this, you know, imagery in the first opening verse about watching classic movies and having this thought of, wow, none of these actors are alive. Do you remember, Ben, what movie or what instance first triggered that thought?
It was kind of an inside joke that my wife and I still have where we'll be watching an old movie and there'll be like a dog will walk into the scene and, and Rachel, you know, Rachel will just kind of like lean over and go like, that dog's dead now. It's been dead for a long time. Or you know, we'll be watching, or there'll be like an old person in a film that was like shot in 1955. And I'll turn to her and be like, that person is way dead right now. So dead. And so, you know, it's a form of gallows humor amongst us, but it also, but I also think there's something very beautiful about, how people are preserved in art and in, or are preserved by like the public record or by photographs, hearing their voice, a voice recording from the turn of the century, you know, a film, and I've often found it really kind of strangely comforting that while we as human beings really have no way of knowing if there's any kind of existence after we leave this mortal coil, we do leave something behind for future generations, and in a way, you know, Anna Karina or Monica Vitti or whomever I was singing about in the song, like they live forever in celluloid. They live forever in film. But there is that weird kind of dichotomy of seeing somebody at a young age, very vibrant. And then you're seeing this person for maybe the first time in an old film, but you're also very aware that person is dead now. So, you know, it's like you're celebrating this person's, you know, vibrancy and their youth and their beauty and, while also holding this other truth that they have been dead for a long time. And I just find that as an interesting dichotomy.
The first time I heard this song, there was a Twitter thread that had gone viral, and it was an academic who was talking about why... Do you know what? Maybe Dave knows
what
I'm
saying. I already know what you're going
to say. No, and this guy talking about how he wants his work to be read 200 years from now, which is, you know, I mean, I guess ambition, that's fine. But that got me thinking as someone, as people who make things... I know the obvious thought is, yes, I want my work to be recognized, particularly while I'm alive, so that I can, you know, understand how this might have touched someone's life. But is it something that you even think or care about, like, if someone's listening to a Death Cab for Cutie song 200 years from now? Does that ever factor in?
That's not something I think about often. I feel, I can't remember where I read this, and I wish I could give somebody credit for this, but... I read about a theory in recent years that was like the people are basically remembered for two generations. And this is specific to like musicians or film, you know, actors, whatever. And it's usually the generation that experienced that person in real time. And then the generation that generation taught about that person. So my parents grew up with the Beatles. They taught me about the Beatles. So now I love the Beatles, but it eventually, the cultural kind of cachet, not so much with the Beatles, but with a lot of stuff kind of, it peters out over time because eventually there's just not enough connective tissue to connect you to something that happened 100 years ago, you know, right?
Right.
So for me, I feel very beyond fortunate and grateful that, you know, some of the work that we have made has resonated with people in their lives to such an extent, and that the music that we have made has been used and listened to during like really pivotal moments in people's lives. I don't particularly care if somebody's listening to Death Cab the day after I die, you know,
sure,
because we've been able to see how, you know, not just our music, but just how music touches people's lives. It wasn't necessarily the intent from the beginning, but it's a pretty good feeling to know that, you know, something that you made touched another human being's life.
Let's check out Here to Forever. It's Death Cab for Cutie on World Cafe.
In every movie I watch from the 50s, there's only one thought that swirls around my head now. And that's that everyone there on the screen, yeah, everyone there on the screen, well, they're all dead now. They're all dead now. And it ain't easy living above. And I can't help but keep falling in love with bones and ashes. With bones and ashes. And when the color's too bold and bright, I'm daydreaming in black and white until it passes. Until it passes. So hard to relax. You gotta hold a gun to my back to make me smile. To make me smile. And the only way I seem to cope is by trying to hold on to hope, if just for a while. If just for a while. Keep scrolling. And I want to know the measure from here to forever. I want to feel the pressure.
Recorded live, it's Death Cab for Cutie with Here to Forever. Ben Gibbard, Dave Depper are my guests from Death Cab for Cutie talking about their new album, Asphalt Meadows. John Congleton joins for this album as producer. He's worked with a lot of artists. For Audience, just a few to name, St. Vincent, Spoon, Phoebe Bridgers, but a really impressive resume.
He's awesome.
You can have a producer who's like an engineer, and then there's going to be someone who, to steal a sports analogy, is like a Phil Jackson, a Zen master kind of guy who doesn't necessarily tell you what knobs to turn, but is there to ask questions and see you, you know, sort of figure this out on your own. Do you have a preference in terms of a style, or is it album to album you're looking for something different?
I think the thing that was so great about working with John is that he is an incredible interpreter of your idea, but he takes your idea and makes it even better and more impressive than you maybe initially had thought it might be. So that's one part of it, which is like he's able to kind of, I get what you're going for and I'm going to push it even further. Like a perfect example of that was like Roman Candles. And I was like, I want this song to feel like you've been being punched in the face for like 2 minutes. And my the demo, my home demo of that song, was fairly abrasive, but nothing nearly as abrasive as what John ended up kind of making out of it, which was the goal. And then secondly, he was really good at keeping us, if we started meandering off the road of cool ideas into, like, you know, the alleys of bad ideas, he would be like, guys, it's not working. Get out of the alley. We got to get back on the road. Let's go. Like, or you guys have played this 5 times. I've got it. You don't need to play it again. Like, I've got all the stuff I need. He was very good at keeping the session moving, and he worked very quickly, which was very different than how this band has tended to work in the past. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we brought in songs that were pretty much completed and arranged in a way that we really hadn't before. But also, I mean, we would do a song 3 times and be like, I mean, you can play it again, but I got it. And we don't need to do it again.
It was so quick that it was hard to trust at first that we were doing good work necessarily, because we're so used to being perfectionists about stuff. But he kind of just has this, he's this amazing combo of very confident, but not necessarily cocky. It's like this humble confidence where he sort of Jedi mind tricks you into realizing he's right and just going with whatever he suggests. And we kind of just did.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we had initially met with him and talked about doing this record, you know, we were saying, like, look, we really want to be produced. We really want somebody to come in and just, really kind of like, point the ship in this direction. Like, we're going this direction. And we had come off making 2 records with Rich Costey, who's a brilliant, brilliant dude. But he produced kind of by, like, he would kind of hang back and wait for us to find it. And sometimes that worked, and sometimes we just really wanted somebody to tell us what to do, you know?
Sure.
We just wanted somebody to tell us, like, dude, is this working? If it is, cool, we'll keep doing it. If not, tell us it sucks. Like, it won't hurt our feelings. And, you know, I think one of the concerns that John had going into working with us, that I think most producers have with any act that they work with, is, you know, if you're coming to me, you're asking for, you want the things that I provide. So if you say you want to get weird on this record, then let's get weird. But I'm going to push back if we start getting weird and that makes you feel uncomfortable. That's the whole point, is that we'll be doing some things that you guys have not normally done. And that's why you came to me. And just remember that. And we're like, totally. And then we got in, and to our credit, we were like, yeah, go for it. Like, get nuts, get weird. We're not going to push back or be like, I don't know, that sounds a little crazy. You know, we just wanted things to be off the beaten path from how we'd made records for a while.
It is very sweet to hear you talking about him. If he ever needs to add something to his why you should hire me, I'll just clip 2 minutes of this. He can put it on his website. No, it's really, really genuine. Hanging out with Ben and Dave from Death Cab for Cutie. I want to play a little bit of the album version of Roman Candles, because we're going to get into an acoustic performance in just a few minutes, but I want people to hear it right now.
It's been a battle just to wake and greet the day. Then they all disappear like sugar in my coffee. A hint of sweetness, but the bitterness remains. The acidity devouring my body. But I am learning to let go of everything I try to hold. To feel everything like a flame. Now it's a struggle just to feel anything. To feel anything. I watch the world from a window on a hill.
All right, talking about pushing out and getting a little bit adventurous and a little bit weird. Roman Candles, Death Cab for Cutie. I read an interview where you were talking about how far you can push out as Death Cab for Cutie. Like, you can't go chase the hyper pop aggressive sound, say, of like 100 Gex. I think that was the band that was sort of brought up in context.
Yeah, right. It would be weird for us. Yeah.
It would be weird. How do you balance that where you go out like far enough that you're feeling inspired, like you're doing something new, but it's not so far out that people who have several of your albums go, what the hell is that?
Well, I think that when you've been a band as long as we have, and you've made, we made a handful of records that we will, the kind of analogy I keep coming back to is like that will be on our tombstone, right? You know, records like Transatlanticism and Plans and Narrow Stairs, and, you know, were records that kind of are fairly galvanizing for the fan base, and yep. they kind of define a time in this country and this style of music, and they don't define it, but they're a part of it. You know, they're part of the culture of that time. What people see as good tends to be related to the sound of things that they love that you've already done. So there is this thing where, you know, what defines a good Death Cab for Cutie record tends to be in relation to the other records that we've already made that people like. Yeah. So there is, you know, we technically could like, you know, make a hyperpop record next, and it could be the greatest hyperpop record that was ever made. But, you know, the aesthetic criteria for whether or not it's a good Death Cab for Cutie record is related to the work that we've already done.
Right.
So that sets a particular boundary on how far out you can go. But that doesn't mean that you can't be experimental. It doesn't mean that you can't try new things. It just means, like, you know, if we turn in like a record that sounds like Bitches Brew for our next record, like, you know, it's with no vocals on it. Like, it might be great for what it is, but no one's going to see it as a great Death Cab for Cutie record, right?
Right. Needs a different name, a different moniker, or something
exactly.
like that.
So when I say there are boundaries, I'm not saying that in a way to kind of be self-preservational. It's more just that, yes, there are boundaries when you're known for a certain style of music. We don't sit around concerning ourselves with this thing. I think that the growth of this band, certainly after Dave and Zach joined and became more a part of the creative process, you know, just their involvement and their, you know, their brilliance and their ability to kind of pull us in different directions has provided a lot of that exploration that we needed.
Yeah, makes sense. And apologies to the Death Cab fans that were hoping for an avant jazz record next time around. You'll just have to put that on the burner. So we're going to hear this acoustic version of Roman Candles. And, you know, despite not having the studio instrumentation, it still sort of connects. It still resonates in the same way that the album version does. And for Dave, how do you sort of reverse engineer a song when you've got the studio version? You go, I want to make it work for an acoustic or semi-acoustic performance, just a keyboard, acoustic guitar and vocals. What goes into sort of stripping that away?
Well, Ben makes it easy because he writes really good songs. So it's all you got to do is play them. But kind of to the point of what we were just talking about, I think this band has a little bit of a secret weapon in terms of what we're allowed to do, because Ben has such a distinct, unique vocal style and songwriting style that, like, the music under it can kind of push out a bit more because he's going to sound like him. And the band, in a lot of ways, ground zero for how this band sounds is the songs he writes, the lyrics he writes, and the ways he sings them. So we can kind of get away with something like Roman Candles being a bit more extreme, because strip away all that stuff, like you're hearing in this acoustic version, it's just a great song that Ben wrote that you can play on an acoustic guitar.
Let's take a listen to it. Roman Candles, recorded live. It's the World Cafe.
It's been a battle just to wake and greet the day when they all disappear like sugar in my coffee, like sugar in my coffee. A hint of sweetness, but the bitterness remains, the acidity devouring my body, devouring my body. But I am learning to let go of everything I tried to hold too long, 'cause they all explode like Roman candles. I used to feel everything like a flame, now it's a struggle just to feel anything, to feel anything. I watch the world from a window on a hill. Everyone moving as I'm standing still. I'm standing still. But I am learning to let go of everything I tried to hold. Too long, cause they all explode like Roman candles. Try to hold too long, cause they all explode like Roman candles, like Roman candles.
That's Roman Candles. It's from Death Cab for Cutie here on the World Cafe. The new album is called Asphalt Meadows. We're hanging out with Ben Gibbard and Dave Depper of Death Cab for Cutie. I saw that both of you guys are distance runners. Completely noble, if not slightly unhinged, way of staying in shape. And I'm a member of this community, so I share that. But as someone who loves running for the clarity aspect, not so much for all the other things that you have to deal with to get to that point. I'm just curious how much music stuff is going on in your head when you're running, or is that the furthest thing from your mind, I guess, for both of you?
For me, I tend to not listen to a lot of music on long runs, more so because music has a way of marking time. Like a song is 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. And I like to kind of get lost in podcasts or audiobooks or just silence. And I do most of my running's trail running. So I'm usually in the forest or in the mountains for that. But I think for me, when I was younger, when I was in my early 20s, all I did was music. Like all I thought about music, all I did was think about it, write about it, talk about it, listen to it. And as I've gotten older, I've realized that it's really important for me in this phase of my life to have some time away from it. So, you know, I might kind of, there might be a small lyrical idea that kind of floats through my brain, like on a long run in the mountains. But for the most part, it's just a time to kind of just ruminate on my life and my relationships with people and kind of rant and rave with, I have friends I go up long runs with in the mountains, and we just rant and rave about stuff and get things off of our chest and come back and feel like a little bit lighter. So, but I imagine Dave's might be a little bit different than mine.
It sort of depends on the context. If I'm doing a trail run, which is like a third of the time, it's very meditative for me. I am connecting with nature. I am similarly thinking about things going on in my life, connecting with, you know, the great oneness, all that, whatever. I do a lot of city running though on streets, and that's less meditative for me. And I tend to use that as time to check out new music. Because at home I primarily listen to vinyl records. And unless I go out and buy 20 vinyl records a week, which I don't have time to sort of catch up with the new stuff. I'm already trying to catch up with what I already own and listen to what I love. So it's sort of a time to audition whatever's come out this week by somebody I'm paying attention to or somebody I have no idea about. Well, I do find that if I'm stuck on something musically, like if I'm working on my own music or trying to come up with something for the band, the one thing that almost guarantees that I will break that logjam is if I just go on a run and think about that thing. It will almost always resolve during that run. I don't know what to chalk that up to, but it works every time.
That's amazing. Wow. You got to take all of us on a run sometime and we can work out our things. That'd be great.
Sure thing.
There you go. We're talking to Dave and Ben from Death Cab for Cutie about Asphalt Meadows, their latest album, which is available now. One last thing to get to before we make our way out the door, which is 20 years of transatlanticism. Ben, anything that you want to revisit as this celebrates another milestone?
Well, we will be doing a tour that will be, Death Cab will be playing Transatlanticism and Postal Service will be playing Give Up in the same show. So
yeah, that's right.
That, like, you know, we, this record, both of these records, certainly for me, were these like landmark records in my life. And I think certainly in the trajectory of the band, you know, and with Postal Service, this thing came out of nowhere and became this kind of weird cultural phenomenon. I recently read a quote from William Gibson, who said something about his old books being like his children who, you know, they leave home and they get into interesting adventures. And then he almost can't really, I'm paraphrasing, he almost kind of can't take credit for them at a certain point. They're their own beings and they exist out in the world. And that's certainly how I feel about Give Up, because we did very little promo for it. It just kind of took on a life of its own. But, you know, Transatlanticism also kind of took on a life of its own and got swept up in this kind of new culture of indie rock kind of breaking in 2003, 2004, where all of a sudden this music that had been fairly underground became not household names by any stretch of the imagination. It didn't become the dominant style of music in pop culture, but it certainly had a moment where it became much more popular and ubiquitous than it had ever been before. Mm-hmm. And Transatlanticism and certainly Give Up got swept up in that. So, you know, Transatlanticism will always be our breakthrough record. It'll always be the record I think that most people associate us closest with. So I feel that as a band that's been around as long as we have, who are very interested in making new music and expressing new things, while we are very much interested in moving forward together and creating new things and adding hopefully new music to the catalog that people continue to enjoy, it's also really important for us that we recognize the music that we've made that has been so impactful in people's lives, but also it's been impactful in our lives and our lives and our career. And I think these anniversaries allow us an opportunity to do that. So we decided, yeah, let's go out and do it. I mean, I think this will be the kind of show that people will really enjoy. And it'll also give us an opportunity to play this entire record, which we've only done three times, Dave, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, maybe three times from start to finish. So, yeah, we're pretty excited about it. It's gonna be really fun.
See, and I think that's rad. It's tough because you've got, yeah, you know, there's commercial concerns that come with it, but also like you should be able to take a victory lap and be able to like recognize how much of an impact this has had on people's lives and go out and celebrate it with them, you know. And I don't know. It just happens more and more now where it feels like there's this sort of cynicism that creeps in where it's like, oh, it's the cash grab from a band or some nonsense like that, where it's like, no, actually, I love this record and I want to be able to play it for the people who care about it.
Well, and also, you know, I know it's not your take, but the take of it being a cash grab is also kind of BS when you consider the fact that people don't actually buy records anymore. So, you know, it's like, in a way, you know, the dissenting voices, you know, on the internet will say like, well, if a band needs to make a living, they just need to go on tour. They're like, okay, great. Well, we're going to go on tour and we're going to play an old record that people really like. Oh, now it's down to, now they're doing this cash grab. It's like, it's like, I guess we can't win either way. So if people want to consider it a cash grab, they're more than welcome to kind of to say so. But I think that I think that the overwhelming majority of people I should say this. No one's being forced to buy a ticket to this.
Right.
So, you know, if you think it's a cash grab and you find it disgusting, then I guess it's not for you. But I think for a lot of people who love the record or love any record that a band is going out and doing, it's an opportunity to interface with that music in a very different way than just putting the record on and in your house or in your car or whatever.
We leave you with Title and Registration from Transatlanticism. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
It's Death Cab for Cutie, recorded live for World Cafe.
glove compartment is inaccurately named, and everybody knows it, so I'm proposing a swift orderly change. Behind this door, there's nothing to keep my fingers warm. All I find are souvenirs from better times. Before the gleam of your taillights fading east, to find yourself a better life. Some legal documents. As the rain beat down on the hood, where I stumbled upon pictures I tried to forget. And that's how this idea was drilled into my head. Disappointment and regret. Cool, I lying awake at night. And there's no blame for how our love did slowly fade. Now that it's gone, it's like it wasn't there at all. And here I rest, with disappointment and regret. Cool, I lying awake at night, all night. We're lying awake at night.
Gotta admit, that is incredibly cool to hear as a Death Cab for Cutie fan. Recorded live for World Cafe, title and registration from the 2003 album Transatlanticism, turning 20 this year. The Postal Service, the side project from Ben Gibbard, their debut album Give Up turns 20 this year, and you'll have the chance to see both of those albums performed live in concert by those bands this fall. Worth looking for tickets. Thanks to Ben and Dave of Death Cab for Cutie. We're back in a minute with more World Cafe.